Hi, this is Carol S., a grateful compulsive overeater and food addict. And it is my pleasure to introduce to you my friend Anne Marie. We go to the same meeting out of San Diego. This meeting was my home meeting when I lived in San Diego. And I'm very pleased and honored and that she is here to speak for us today. Thank you, Anne Marie. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Anne Marie. I'm a compulsive eater, and thank you, Carol, for the invitation. I'm always glad to do service. I love to do service. That's what the 12th step tells us that we have to do. We have to carry the message. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the doctor's opinion, and I'm going to do some reading from it and then talk about it. So if you have your big books handy, you can turn to Roman numeral page number 21, which is the beginning. And you can follow through with me. And as far as the timing goes, I'm just going to keep on talking and read. And when my time is up, just let me know. And we'll see how far we get. So, it starts out and it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader would be interested in the medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. Well, here the author is trying to validate to us why this book is being written. They have something important to tell, and they believe that if the doctor says it works, then it must really work. And then it goes on to say, convincing testimony must surely come from medical men who have witnessed our return to health. A well-known doctor, chief physician at a nationally prominent hospital specializing in alcohol and drug addiction, gave Alcoholics Anonymous this letter. So at the time, the only experience alcoholics had was through doctors. There was no internet. There was no huge network. There was no way to find out. It was through word of mouth and through the doctor. So it's important that you see your experience as I'm going to go through this. Right? That's why you need to identify. And so what did Dr. Silkworth said? Well, what he's saying is that doctors can't help us. Here, Dr. Silkworth tells us that the medical profession can't help us. In his book, he describes many years that he spent looking for a cure for this alcoholism, and he was heartbroken that he couldn't help. He tells us that all the doctor's knowledge, all his experience, his scientific education, they've all failed us. And here we have to ask ourselves, what methods have we tried that have been recommended by doctors? And we food addicts, we've tried, what have we done? We've tried every type of diet known to the world. Some of us have done gastric bypass. We've done appetite suppressants. We've used amphetamines. We've tried psychotherapy, even hypnosis. What about ear stapling? And what about all those liquid powders and shakes that we've tried? And what did we find out? They all failed to keep the weight off. So the doctors are still looking for that magic cure for us. Scientists have given us what they've given us: synthetic fat, sugar-free substances. And today, doctors still give us suggestions for losing weight. But the doctors fail us, because they don't have the solution for how to keep the weight off once we lose it. They can help us lose it, but then what happens? They don't have the answer. So that's what Dr. Silkworth is telling us, that after all his years of working with alcoholics, the only thing that has ever helped is a spiritual experience. And it's the same for us with food. We need to find a spiritual experience to pull us back from the gates of hell. And that's what this book gives us. If we're willing to put aside everything we think we know for a new experience, we're going to get that spiritual experience. So then Dr. Silkworth continues to write, and so then the book continues to say, we do, and he says, we doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology, which really is a spiritual experience or an awakening, was of urgent importance to food addicts. But the experience or the application presented difficulties beyond the doctor's conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we doctors are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good, powers of God, that lie outside of our synthetic knowledge, and that's outside of their medical knowledge. So many years ago, one of the leading contributors, Bill Wilson, to this book came under our care in the hospital. And while here, he acquired some ideas. And what were those ideas? They were the six tenets of the Oxford Group. And I'm not going to go a lot into the Oxford Group. If you want to know more, just Google the Oxford Group. But that's how Bill, Ebby brought the Oxford Group to Bill. And Bill used those six tenets. And he, what he did is he was able to take those and he put them into the 12 steps, which we just heard read a little bit earlier though. So here's the real meat of this chapter. Dr. Silkworth said, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of food on these chronic compulsive eaters is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average or normal eater. So now, in the next paragraph, he's going to give us five questions. The five questions that are true, the reason being that because of the previous question about the allergy, because when I put something into my mouth, into my system, I physically lose control of how much I'll do once I start. And so this is what the doctor said. These allergic types can never safely use food in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. So here's the five questions that we need to ask ourselves. Can we use certain types of food safely? Do they form a habit? Can I break it? 4, do I lose self-confidence that anything human can keep me abstinent? And 5, did my problems pile up on me and become astonishingly difficult for me to solve? So here's a consideration for you overeaters. What do we consider using? How do we use food? You know, we can't put the plug in the jug like alcoholics. We have to let the tiger out of the cage 3 times a day. So what foods give you problems? All foods? Sugar? White flour? Carbohydrates? That's what you need to ask yourself. So if you are using any of these foods for comfort or as a mood or mind-altering process, you're using food as a drug. And if you're eating compulsively, something triggered it. Something manipulated, so we manipulate foods to get the effect. Anything external in your life can be used to fill an internal void. And that's what happens to us. So we have an allergy. So on the next page, Dr. Silkworth tells us that we have an allergy. And for the alcoholic, it's alcohol. But for we compulsive eaters, we have an allergy to some or all foods once we put them in our mouth. So what happens? After that first bite, we break out in a physical craving. The phenomenon occurs. It's real for we compulsive eaters. If we don't think we're real compulsive eaters, try eating one cookie or try just one spoonful of ice cream. Can you leave it at that? Or do you have to go back and ask and get more? So we are not normal eaters as much as we really want to be. You know, my son has an allergy to nuts. I didn't know this until the day I let him have a little piece of a Brazilian nut. And I had no idea what was going on. I just gave him the nut and, you know, I wanted to see what would, you know, I was having one and I said, you know, try it, see if it happens, you know. Well, his tongue swelled and he couldn't breathe. And I didn't know what to do. It was winter. We had a snowstorm outside. My husband wasn't home from work yet. So stupid me, did I call the doctor? I just sat there with him, rocking him. I could have called a pediatrician if I hadn't been so fearful of doing the wrong thing. I should have really called 911. He was on the verge of anaphylactic shock, but I didn't know anything about allergies. At the very next visit to the pediatrician, I told him about it. And well, he gave me a lecture, and he told me that I had to get an EpiPen in case it ever happens again. So from that day on, we protected him so that he never had any foods that contained nuts of any sort. So that allergy was so drastic for him that it could have killed him. He's 51 years old, and to this day, he carries an EpiPen with him just in case. Now, I have an allergy to sugar, except when I eat it, I don't break out in anaphylactic shock. I break out in a physical craving for more. Does that teach me a lesson? No, because I'm a real compulsive eater. I can never get enough sugary desserts. When I worked as a social worker at a VA hospital, daily, I would have to face the gauntlet of food. If any of you have ever worked in a hospital, you know what I mean. The pharmaceutical reps, the doctors, they bring in gobs of sweets for the nurses. They put them in the break room, and I could always find an excuse to go back and leave my office and sneak back there for seconds, thirds, until it was all gone. So the phenomenon of craving was awful, and I had no defense against it once I took that first bite. And then Dr. Silkworth goes on, and he says, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Did I have frothy emotional appeal in my life? Has anyone ever asked you to lose weight? Dr. Silkworth talks about frothy emotional appeal. In our home, for me growing up, we always had evening snacks. Sometimes it would be fruit, chocolate, candy, or salted mixed nuts, or an ice cream cone. My parents would have a serving and they'd be satisfied. Not for me. I wanted more. And my mother would appeal to me and she would say, Anne-Marie, you've had enough. And I would reluctantly return the box or the tin back to the pantry. But did I have enough? No, because the craving took over. I would sneak a few more while I took the container back to the kitchen. And then I'd have to white knuckle it for the rest of the evening. So frothy emotional appeal never worked for me. And I'm going to ask you, has it ever worked for you? So then back to the book. So Dr. Silkworth says, the message which can interest and hold these compulsive overeating people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. So it's not about picking up. Already, you know, talking about recreating our lives, setting up a new life. Here's the premise. If my ideals are grounded in a power greater than myself, my life can be recreated. So men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by food, by drinking, just like we like the effect of the food by food. That sensation is so elusive that when they admit that it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. So this is where we start to see the delusion. People think this is about being in denial, but can you be in denial of something you don't know, or are you really in a delusion? Are you blind? To them, alcoholics seems like it's the only thing for them. So we need to be around people who are doing what we're doing. Boy, is this the truth. So we hang out with binge buddies. We're like kids, family, certain friends, or like a lot of us, we binge in isolation because we're embarrassed. We don't want others to see how we eat because we don't want others. Maybe we just don't want to share our stash with them. So then the book says they are restless. Yeah, we get uneasy. We're irritable. Yeah, we become easily annoyed and we're discontented. Because, you know, we're never satisfied. So what we're doing is we're setting up the unmanageability here. Unless we can again, and again, here's the key word, again, Because once we did starting deluding ourselves to thinking that this time it's going to work, we have the experience, the sense of ease and comfort comes on all at once after we've taken that first drink or those few bites, which we see others taking without impunity. It's all here. They can eat. Why can't we eat? It's the delusion that I am like other people that has to be smashed. And then the books, after they have succumbed to the desire again, that's talking about the mental obsession taking over, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, that's it, the allergies being fired, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to eat again. So here's a consideration. What do your sprees look like? What happens when you get out of it? After you've had a spree, you feel exhausted, you feel stuffed. And how do you get out of it? Me, it was when I ran out of my supply. And then this is repeated, the book says, over and over again, unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, and there is little hope for the recovery. So what happens is this cycle keeps repeating over and over again until we have this psychic change. And this is the psychic change. Why did I use excess food? For me, I had been plagued with anxiety. And I found that when I ate, the anxiety would dissipate. And even when I realized I had enough and the anxiety had dissipated, I still continued to binge because I set off the allergy. And when I became an adult, I continued to gain more weight. And I kept doing this over and over again. And I would search high and low, open and close refrigerator, cabinet doors, even getting in the car to make a grocery run. When I was irritable, I would lose my temper. I'd yell at my kids. When I was discontent, I would be dissatisfied with my life. And what I would find fault with those around me. No one could make me happy, only my binge foods. And the book says, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem, to those who do not understand, once the psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems, he despaired of ever resolving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary was a few rules. And what were those rules? Well, that's the 12 steps. This is it. We work the 12 steps and we find out that we are compulsive eaters. We find out that food isn't our problem. It's that our lives are unmanageable. That's what we find out. Our lives are unmanageable. And as we work the steps, we learn how to manage our lives better. That's what we need to do. That's what sets us apart. So do we lose control when we take that first bite? Of course we lose control.
2 minutes.
How many? Five?
Did you say 2 minutes left. Two minutes left.
Okay. So that's what we find out. So then, we have to ask ourselves, do you believe that you have an allergy? Do you believe that the only relief from this allergy is entire abstinence? How do you stay abstinent? How do you stay stopped? What's the solution? The solution is working the 12 steps. That's the only thing that works. Like me, were you living to just eat? Was that your entire existence? I was living in the food, always concerned about where I was going to get it, how I was going to hide it, and that how I was going to eat it. So Dr. Silkworth brought up at the end of this chapter two miracles. One was Hank Harkhurst, who was an executive with Standard Oil, who all of a sudden appeared before him, and Dr. Silkworth said, I get a mental lift from him because I didn't know who he was. Wow, he had really changed. And then he talks about another man, Fitz Mayhew. And Fitz Mayhew, you can read his story in We Agnostics. and also in the back of the book under our seven gentlemen. These were the two people that he talks about in the end. And then Dr. Silkworth ends the letter by saying, I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through and through. Perhaps you may come to stop, but maybe you remain to pray. And that is for us. We need to read this book through and through, because we may stop at first, but then we may see that it has the answer. Thanks for letting me share.